Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome today to the Piper Sandler Energy and Power Banking call focused on upstream market trends and a 2022 outlook. My name is Spencer Ripstein, and I'm a managing director and co-head of the Energy and Power team here at Piper. Our panelists today are senior upstream bankers, managing directors Doug Reynolds, Dallas Griffin, and Robert Urquhart, and director Max Anderkin. The call is designed to be 45 minutes, and therefore we will not have time for audience questions. However, if you have any questions following the call, please reach out to your Piper Sandler representative. The call cannot be referenced in any articles, and this conversation should be considered off the record. So with that, we'll go ahead and dive right in. We'll start with a question for Doug. You may maybe walk through an update of our upstream team activity in 2021 and how you think we're situated at Piper as we move into 2022.
Thanks, Spencer. We did truly have a very active year in 2021, particularly strong in the second half. It was kind of broadly consistent with the industry trend. U.S. upstream had a record transaction year, kind of over $53 billion of asset deals that we track transacting in the year. That excludes close to $10 billion of pure corporate-to-corporate M&A. That's a record on the asset side since 2014, when we were at a higher oil price environment, obviously a very different environment 7 years ago. And it's also twice, it's higher than 19 and 20 combined. So it was a great year for transactions, a great year, frankly, for both buyers and sellers. We closed six upstream transactions in 2021. We've got two more in active PSA negotiation, and we're working a very kind of strong backlog heading into 2022. Our business was particularly active in the Eagle Ford, where we have spent a lot of time and developed a deep knowledge. I think between the MDs here, we've completed more than twice the number of deals or value in that basin versus our closest competitor. And it's, which has been really great. The basin, continues to produce a lot of cash flow, but also a lot of transaction activity. And this would be, our leadership there is kind of measured either over the very recent past, last year or so, or over a longer period going back to 2013-2014 peak. We also closed a number of notable deals in 2021 in other basins, including the Permian, Bakken, and the Mid-Con. So we continue to be quite active in a number of spots across the United States. A couple of themes emerge for us. They're kind of continuing into 2022. The first is greater value for inventory. We achieved some record values for sticks or locations in several of our sell sides this year. This is obviously a focus of us as a sell side advisor and, partly due to the unique way that we go about assessing upside cases here. But it's also due to a strong industry need for more high-quality inventory overall to drill, even in the new kind of the new paradigm of relatively low reinvestment. The second is new entrants. Approximately 40% of asset sales by value last year went to new basin entrants, which I think was shocking to many at the beginning of the year. Most operators kind of assume that they'll sell to the operator next door. But that isn't always the case. Many companies have very different strategies today compared to a year ago. And so the old rules, often just don't apply. And, for people who've been in this business a long time, you kind of think like, oh, I know what this company is up to. I know what their strategy is. Many times we're finding that those strategies are fundamentally different today than they were in the relatively recent past. And as companies continue to kind of improve their balance sheets and get stronger, that will cause their strategies to change further. We're spending a ton of time with buyers kind of across the piece to look at who might, be well-suited to come into a particular basin. And that is really starting to kind of pay off for our business. Third is that gas-focused deal volumes are starting to increase. The narrative's obviously shifted with higher gas prices, the Europe energy crisis, and a new kind of recognition of gas importance to the energy security picture. Those macro kind of things are really important to what we see at the micro level. We saw gas-focused deals were about 20% of the total in 2021, but expect this kind of percentage will be up in a bigger year in 2022. I mean, of course, oil has great margins at 80-plus and will remain active. But it's great to see kind of activity across the product mix and across basins. And a last comment I'll make, which I think we'll talk about much later in the, you know, here, about 30% of transaction value in 2021 was funded with equity. That was mostly issued to sellers rather than the market. So we all think about, you know, the public equity markets being really bad for energy investors, but there's still a lot of equity that went out the door. Generally speaking, you know, those companies that issued that equity are feeling very good about those acquisitions, but the sellers who took that equity have also made very good money in the context of great performance year last year. So we expect a similar kind of percentage in 2022, but you know, more issuance. We see more issuance into the broader market as well as to sellers. So that's kind of a broad outline, Spencer, of kind of what we've been up to. But bottom line, pretty active recently.
Great. Thanks, Doug. Max, this one's for you. How did you see the transaction environment change in 21, and what do you think are some of the key aspects that drove that change and our activity level and success?
Thanks, Spencer. 2021 was a very, very dynamic year, driven largely in part by pent-up supply demand for assets as well as, supply and demand for assets. Just for context, oil was in the 30s in October of 2020, it was in the 40s in January, and it was in the 70s by June, so just a dramatic change. As a result, 2020 was very quiet, kind of in historical context. So we did about $9 billion in deals in 2020 versus plus or minus 50 in 2021. 2021, in a historical context, also is one of the busiest years we've had in A&D for kind of the last several years before 2020 as well. So we actually eclipsed 2020 by April of 2021, and we eclipsed 2019 by September. So the pace was very highly accelerated kind of from the beginning of the year. A lot of the supply was really driven by just a major backlog of, one, public companies looking to clean up, and maybe more importantly, private companies that their timeline would have likely had them exit in 2020 and just really waited for the window in 21. On the public side, it's a lot of meaningful cleanup and consolidation in 2020 led to the need to divest more assets. So a lot of companies were already well prepared in 21 to divest. On the demand side, was probably even more dynamic in 2021. Early in the year, we really saw demand really being driven by private equity buyers and a few public companies in our data rooms. Towards the mid part of the year, that probably balanced out a little bit more, closer to about 50-50. And really towards the end of the year, as challenge hedge books have rolled off, more public companies with cash have started to emerge to the point that they're now the predominance in the majority of our data rooms. As advisors, one thing that's become very clear to us in this kind of new paradigm is that the quality of the teams evaluating the assets has really increased. An important part of that is that the amount of data in every basin has just increased kind of year over year as the basins have become more developed. So the standard of data that we're being required to provide has really increased. The reality of the cases that we're presenting has increased dramatically, and the depth of analysis that we need to be prepared for has increased tremendously as well. And then lastly, the days of the kind of super aggressive stick counts in our data rooms, poorly supported type curves, unrealistic development plans are over, and we think we've had good success, and buyers have shown a willingness to really pay for realistic cases and well-supported development plans.
Great. Thanks, Max. Enough looking backwards. All right, we're looking forward now. Robert, this is for you. How did we see the transaction environment evolving in 2022?
Yeah, thanks, Spencer. to build on Max's commentary there, I think we'll see a lot of transactions is the short answer. Doug threw out the stat of sort of greater than $60 billion of upstream deals last year, greater than 50 of that being asset deals. And as Max touched on, the first quarter or so was really pretty slow. I think less than 10% of the deals were in the first quarter of 21. We would expect just how busy things are already this year. You saw Chesapeake and Continental transactions involving Chief in Appalachia this morning. You know, a lot of value in that deal. There'll be others like that. So we think we'll have a very active first quarter, different than last year. And if we keep some stability in commodity prices, that activity, that strong level of activity should continue throughout the year. I think the activity will continue to be weighted to asset deals and private company sales rather than public corporate mergers. A lot of that being because a lot of the public to public consolidation has kind of happened when you look at 2019 and 2020. Where the public mergers were the predominant transactions. You also have public E&P companies, as Doug was mentioning, in a lot healthier state today than a couple of years ago from a cash flow and balance sheet perspective, where a large number of the public E&Ps really don't need to do anything today based on those motivations of, say, 2020. So our view is really the top motivation for buyers this year is really going to be around adding to a company's inventory depth and duration of that inventory. When you overlay that with the cash being generated and the strength of balance sheets, plus hedges rolling off, like Max mentioned, in a lot of cases, we think the market is ripe for assets, particularly from private companies and private equity, to be sold to public companies. When you think about inventory quality and depth being a huge motivator for buyers, maybe as a different main driver than when we were more motivated by scale in a lot of cases over the last couple of years, I do think you'll end up seeing assets with quality inventory trade for stronger and stronger multiples as we move throughout the year. We saw that in some cases last year, but we think the high quality assets will continue to be more and more in demand as 2022 plays out. And I think this makes sense in the context of outside of just blowdown PDP scenarios, the companies with the best inventory will be the ones with the best ability to sustain a competitive return of capital model and do that for the longest. And so don't get me wrong on the scale topic. I think scale absolutely matters and can help drive value creation. But the companies with the best inventory that can sustain and grow the return of capital that investors are looking for will be the ones that trade at higher multiples ultimately. I think when you think about the buyers specifically, you had buyers from the public side buying almost 75% of the asset deals last year. We think the public buyers will be the predominant buyers again this year at similar levels or potentially even more on a percentage basis. I think that on the seller side, it's kind of interesting to look at last year where private companies and PE-backed companies were just under 60% of the sellers by value. You then had international parties at about 24% and public sellers at around 18% by deal value. A big part of the international seller portion was obviously the Shell Delaware sale to Conoco. Our view is some international parties will look to monetize some of their U.S. onshore holdings this year, at least of what they have left, but we're unlikely to see it be close to the $15 billion of value that international sold last year. We see the private and PE-backed companies being more active as sellers this year as the public buyer universe is strengthened and investors are starting to get back into upstream names. We think that's supported by the public companies in many cases trading higher than where some private asset deals have priced, so public buyers can make accretive acquisitions. That's changed a little bit in recent weeks where we frankly think the public E&Ps are cheap and investors clearly aren't fully recognizing what we see from a return of capital and abilities to sustain that return in the new model. But we think that will play out positively for public E&Ps this year, making them strong buyers with investors supporting them throughout the year and frankly, their multiples trading up and supporting them making acquisitions and growing that way. I think the one other comment I'd make is where we expect to see the most deals. 50% of the deals in 2021 were in the Permian. The rest were actually pretty spread out between many basins, including the Eagleford, Williston, Haynesville, Appalachia, to some extent DJ Basin. Last year in the Permian, the breakdown was about 50-50 between Midland and Delaware. In our opinion, you'll see the Delaware be a bigger chunk of the overall pie this year. In our view, the Delaware is much less consolidated than the Midland Basin. And we also expect to see some interesting activity on the platform in the Permian, where there's some specific high-quality assets that we think could come to market.
Great. Appreciate it. Doug, on to you. What do you see as opportunities for public companies in 2022, and how do you think they'll approach both acquisitions and divestitures?
Yeah, I mean, picking up on a couple of themes that Max and Robert have brought out, the 46 public U.S. upstream companies that we actively track, and that's the upstream operators, excludes a different group of folks in the royalty group, which we can talk about separately. But the 46 operators are in a uniquely strong position kind of heading into 2022. Share price performance has been strong, of course, with the recovery in 2021. Shout out to Devon and Marathon, who were top of the S&P 500 table last year, which is quite an achievement. And the sector overall was the best performing sector in the S&P last year, which is quite remarkable. And as we head into 2022, in a more mixed market, E&P companies continue to do well, certainly against some of the stocks or industry groups that have outperformed the last couple of years. However, valuation multiples are still quite low against historic norms, and as Robert mentioned, we think they have room to move up. Cash flow multiples have actually kind of compressed as commodities have strengthened lately, and we think this is a basis for some significant change in the year. Even so, acquisition multiples have still been below these public trading multiples lately. So we think buying assets, makes more sense for public companies than buybacks, where they can add on high-quality assets at accretive multiples. And that's clearly been important to the game for the last year plus. Investors are starting to pay attention to the strong dividends and free cash flow that's coming out of the group. Eight of the public guys are paying over a 3% yield, with a few that are close to 10% on a fixed plus variable dividend basis. We think this is a huge value proposition, and as the public companies move up and continue to get investor rotation, we think they will continue to become more active and more aggressive buyers. Leverage in the public side is modest. The average leverage across the space is 1.2 times debt to 2022 estimated EBITDA. That is strikingly low, kind of shocking against history or against other industries. You often used to think about this business being, kind of two times levered. At times, moving up to three times, over the last decade or two. Today at, approaching one times is quite remarkable. With low reinvestment rates that are averaging around 30 to 50% of expected EBITDA, delevering is happening very, very fast. At the same time, in this kind of new paradigm of low reinvestment rates, organic growth is modest. 3 to 5% kind of average across this group, 2022 versus 21. Very, very modest growth. A couple exceptions to that, but by and large, while the group is chewing through some inventory and replacing declines, it's not seeing material growth. And that's true of the larger E&Ps all the way down to the smaller. There's really nobody that has a kind of a growth model that they're putting forward to investors today. If you take a look at that consensus EBITDA estimate for 2022 across the companies, there's over $40 billion that's unallocated, i.e., this is the amount of free cash flow after CapEx, dividends, interest, and the announced buybacks. Some of that may head into further delevering, but with the industry largely delevered, we think a large part of that will head into acquisitions. If you put a little bit of leverage onto that much cash flow, that is a very significant amount of money likely to come into the asset market. So while investors really are not hugely supportive of aggressive drilling, we do find a lot of capital that's looking at drilling, and the private sector is, of course, drilling pretty actively. But in the public space, public companies had great success, generally speaking, with acquisitions in 2021. They were generally rewarded, and the buyers exceeded peers in trading after those deals. So we think that growth through acquisitions is going to continue into 2022. As Robert said, public companies bought about 70% of the deals that transacted last year. That's kind of interesting, particularly when we really didn't see public companies active at all in the beginning of the year. You know, when we worked for a great client buying a, you know, top position in the Permian early in 2021, you know, we beat out a leading private equity firm, and the public companies, you know, including many of the leading Permian players that were operating adjacent, you know, were kind of largely sidelined with various balance sheet or other kinds of concerns. But as we kind of closed out the year and ran a couple processes in the Eagle Ford, our data rooms were kind of filled with public company executives, you know, often mainly, you know, kind of C-level guys that were really looking at a big deal and chasing one. You know, I don't think we'll see companies kind of spraying cash around, you know, in the way that things happened at the peak. I don't want to get misconstrued. You know, most of these companies are cautious, working assets very hard, digging in. They recognize that this is probably their, in some cases, their first deal, you know, post the COVID crash, and they have to get it right. But I think the trend is very clear. That we'll see a lot more activity among the publics.
Great. Thank you, Doug. Thank you. Thank you, Doug. So flipping over to private companies. This one is for you, Robert. What do you see as opportunities for those businesses in the upcoming year?
Sure. Thanks, Spencer. You know, I think the short answer is there's going to be a long list of opportunities for private companies. A lot of the themes Doug was laying out for the public companies are definitely impacting the private businesses as they've performed very well, both operationally from a leverage standpoint, as their cash flows have started growing pretty considerably. You know, I'd say the privates will be active as sellers, buyers, fundraisers, kind of you name it. As I touched on before, I think we'll see the private and PE-backed companies be the most active sellers this year. As Doug was saying, the publics are back on their front foot for acquisitions, and we think that level of demand will just continue to grow. There are also some large private companies that can be competitive consolidators as well and play a role for private asset or company sales. So I don't want to overlook that. I think there's a number of very large private equity-backed or just private businesses that can chase really large acquisitions and are contemplating that this year. I do think the IPO market will continue to improve for the private companies throughout the year. That's probably not a huge stretch because we haven't seen many in the last handful of years, really, but I'd be surprised if we didn't see that emerge as at least a more attractive alternative. I also think you'll see some reverse mergers like the recent Desert Peak Falcon announcement. You know, those deals aren't easy to get done, but in some ways they can be better than a just straight IPO and help solve things for both sides. So we could see some more of that. I think it's really important to think about private companies as buyers. Let's not forget that the private and PE-backed companies did represent over $12 billion of transactions last year. So that's clearly not a small amount. The private companies have been known to buy assets from the public sellers that maybe aren't competing for capital in the public company portfolios and then make something out of those assets. So, you know, just echoing what I've already said, the private companies will be active on the acquisition front. I also don't think we should underestimate the amount of assets that we'll see come out of some of the bigger E&Ps and majors that have been involved in corporate merger activity over the last few years, or that are frankly just huge companies that need to high grade their asset portfolios. There are a lot of assets inside really large companies that may not make sense inside those companies longer term that could become available, and private companies are usually very strong competitors for those assets. I also think the prospects of running a private company without an exit could play out as the most attractive option for a number of the private companies. You know, Doug was touching on this, and I mentioned earlier, some of these private companies are really, really performing well, generating a ton of free cash and spending, you know, a similar reinvestment rate of 30 to 50% of their EBITDA. So while we've seen the public company model evolve, we've also seen that many private companies can do the same and can continue to run their business and distribute cash to their owners, including management, and not necessarily have to exit via sale for a good outcome. There are also other opportunities. I think we'll get into capital markets here in a minute, but you know, on the debt capital market side, there are legitimate options for some of the bigger private companies to continue running their business and find ways to return capital to their shareholders without an outright exit. But that's kind of how I see it from a public, or sorry, from a private standpoint this year.
Great, thanks. So finishing strong with Dallas here. Dallas, what do you? We're going to talk a little about capital markets. How are capital markets alternatives changing from upstream for upstream companies, and what impact do you think this will have over the year?
Thanks, Spencer. Yeah, I think we've touched on several of these kind of points, you know, throughout the conversation today. But the capital landscape for our sector, you know, it's pretty interesting for these times. On the private side, you know, we've got, call it $10 to $12 billion of earmarked capital for this space that is yet to be, you know, put to work. It seems like the next big raises for the same investment activity are kind of further out on the horizon. So that's the private side. As we look at the public markets, it's really amazing how much the, you know, the landscape has changed over the past 5 years. We, you know, if we were having this call 5 years ago, we'd be talking about securing American energy independence, and we've fully transitioned from that environment to one where we're now, you know, designing our companies for an ESG conscious, you know, public sector that is focused on seeing real cash returns. And, you know, over the past few years, we've made significant strides to get there, and the sector is broadly healthy. You know, Doug mentioned this before, but just to, you know, when we talk about alternatives in the public markets, I think you have to take note of how we're currently positioned. And as Doug mentioned, you know, net debt to EBITDA for you know, companies over $1 billion is well, you know, south of, you know, 1.5 times. And even though we're at, you know, all-time highs or near all-time highs for a lot of the leaders in the space, you know, we still don't see this as an overvalued sector. And Robert spoke to that to some extent. You know, median EV to EBITDA is close to 4 times for the group, and we're seeing, you know, very healthy companies generating significant, you know, cash flow on much leaner operating structures out of you know, a 2020 that was painful to endure, but has set a lot of companies and investors up for success. Doug spoke to the dividend yields. You know, when you look at dividend yields and stock buybacks, you know, the value proposition to investors today is pretty dramatic, and you know, if you look at the expectations for this year on both fronts, and extrapolate that going forward, you could see 100% payback out of dividends and share buybacks in close to 10 years for, you know, the majority of the large caps and market leaders. You know, pretty interesting when you kind of go back and revisit some, you know, white papers on the redesign of our industry, the redesign of companies in 19 and 20. You know, this was where investors were telling us we needed to be, and the space is largely here. You know, certainly easier to do at scale, and the bigger companies in the space are finding success there. So we're fortunate to have, you know, healthy and strong cash flowing companies leading the sector in terms of how they're, you know, acting in the public markets and how they're capitalizing on this prime position. I think we're going to see a few different approaches to that in 22. As we've mentioned before, you know, E&Ps, you know, relied substantially on equity issuance to sellers to finance a significant portion of the deal flow in 21. That was close to 30% of asset deals. You know, we think that continues. We see a good, you know, ARB from where they trade to where they're able to secure, you know, many assets that they'd like to tuck into the portfolio. So that's a good trade for management teams and their investors. You know, in thinking about, you know, raising equity from the public markets directly rather than issuing it to sellers, we've seen, you know, more reluctance to do that at these valuations for many, and some concern around what the reaction would be in the public space. But you know, some of our clients have had a lot of success and would you know, point out Northern Oil and Gas has really paved the way and shown what that, you know, can look like in a successful deal that's very well communicated to. You know, to the public and to investors. I think, you know, in those instances, you have to be very clear about, you know, how it speaks to the new design of the sector. Robert spoke about IPOs in terms of the market for new IPOs. We believe that they can get done, but, you know, that they're frequently done at significant discounts, and that'll probably be the case, you know, if we see a return in this space. You know, as we think about use of proceeds, as Robert mentioned, there are several, you know, large private companies that are essentially executing on the same public company model in terms of reinvestment ratios and capital return to their shareholders. They're doing it without the public company cost, and they have no need for near-term liquidity. So there's several large publics that, frankly, look healthier and probably more attractive as entities to investors than certain of the public companies. And, you know, I think when the stars align for those, we might see those, you know, enter the market. You know, also other competing alternatives, you know, Robert mentioned reverse mergers as being an attractive way for some entities to get in, to get public, and I think we'll continue to see that. And then, of course, you know, there's a number of SPACs that are also, you know, looking at the space, and we think that's another capital markets alternative that you know, we'll continue to see here in 2022. In terms of other sources of capital available to the sector, we've also seen success in the public debt markets. However, you know, publics are certainly reluctant to add debt in this environment and have been keen on delevering rather than adding debt. But for non-publics, you know, we think that could be, you know, an interesting source of recapitalization that achieves a lot of the same goals that an IPO might have in another market. And then, you know, beyond that, I'd say new, you know, relatively increased interest around other products. That's worth noting would be, you know, asset-backed securities. You know, we've seen an increased interest there for assets with the, you know, the appropriate production profiles. And even with rate hikes on the horizon, you know, we remain in a yield-starved environment. And, you know, we think ABS buyers can at times provide more attractive alternatives to potential sellers than they might receive in an outright sales process. And on the heels of the, you know, the combination with Sandler O'Neill a couple of years ago, you know, we're fortunate to have one of the highest quality benches of financial service bankers on the street, and they have a great securitization practice that we can leverage for our clients. So, in general, we think it's a company characterized as having quite a bit of healthy companies that are well positioned and generating a lot of cash flow. And we think it'll be an attractive year in the capital markets in 22.
Great. Appreciate it, Dallas. Well, that should wrap it for today's conversation. Thank you again for everyone who attended the call today. We will continue to host similar calls. And so if you have any topics you'd like to see addressed, please reach out to me or Victoria Beard, and we'd be happy to try to help you out and make sure we spend some time on the topic. Finally, please reach out to your Piper Sandler representative if you have any questions regarding today's conversation or would request any follow-up. We look forward to speaking with you soon. You may now disconnect.